Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiyo. Welcome to Kiwi's Birth Tales. My brother's name is Ollie and I'm Die Boy. Thank you for listening from Mommy's podcast. See you later.
This episode of Kiwi Birth Tales is proudly brought to you by Pure Mama Skincare. It is one of my absolute ride or dies during pregnancy. I can genuinely recommend the skincare range from Pure Mama, which I personally used and loved. Everything from their belly oil to their magnesium body rub, which I am still using now, to their nipple butter for postpartum are absolute game changers. They are such beautiful products, and I personally know the team at Pure Mama. They work so hard to develop the highest quality natural products that not only smell and feel amazing, but actually work. You will hear Jess and I talk about Pure Mama during this episode because Jess is also a fan, but I cannot talk highly enough about the Pure Mama team and their products. So if you're pregnant, make sure you go and check them out. And if you're just listening to this episode because you're interested or you know someone who is pregnant, they also make beautiful gifts. So thank you, Pure Mama, for sponsoring this episode and for making the most beautiful pregnancy skincare out there. Kia ora and welcome back to another episode of Kiwi Birth Tales. I am your host Jordan and I am so happy to have you here with me today. From wherever you're listening in the world, I am so grateful that you are choosing to have me in your ears. I am a mum of two. I've got Jai who's 4 and Ali who is 2. I also have a business baby, which is your birth project, and your birth project is everything you need if you are pregnant. It is an online hypnobirthing course designed to help you create your best birth. Does not matter if you are planning a C-section, a home birth, a drug-free birth, a vaginal birth, it doesn't matter what you're planning. It is going to help you have your best birth, so make sure you go and check it out. It's also got an amazing section for birth partners to help your birth partner be the best birth partner they can be at your birth. So yeah, go and check out Your Birth Project. You'll also hear Jess talk about the course as she is a Your Birth Project mama. Today I am speaking with Jess and I have followed Jess on social media for such a long time. She is so lovely and I know you're going to enjoy her episode. There's just so much packed in there and she's very open and vulnerable and honest with us. So super grateful to Jess for being willing to come on and share her story. Another reminder that Pure Mama are the sponsor on this week's episode, and just want to say a huge thank you to Lara and the team at Pure Mama for sponsoring this week's episode. If I could honestly recommend one thing to you in the start of your pregnancy journey, I would say Pure Mama. It is the most incredible pregnancy skincare and you will not be disappointed. I will let you enjoy this episode. I'd love to hear from you, so find me on socials at Kiwi Birth Tales or at Your Birth Project. Enjoy! Hi, Jess. Thank you so much for joining me on the Kiwi Birth Tales podcast today.
No worries. Thank you for having me. It's a big moment. I did want to say that the whole time we were trying to get to this point where we had a little baby, I listened to Kiwi Birth Tales. It would have been probably for 3 years. and I remember this being my North Star moment when I'd be really upset that it wasn't going to plan. I was like, I will one day be sharing our journey on Kiwi Birth Tales and there'll be a little baby in the other room. And yeah, it feels like I have goosebumps right now. Just the fact that like this is that moment. It's really cool. So thank you for what you do.
No, amazing. I am much the same actually. I feel like we've been chatting online and like, yeah, I've followed you for ages. So it's very cool to have you here on the podcast today. And we're gonna talk all things, yeah, journey to pregnancy, birth, motherhood. Yes. So we've got a lot to cover today, but why don't we start with an intro to you, who you are and who is in your family.
Yes, so I'm Jess Quinn. In my family is my husband Todd. Still feels weird to say husband, but my husband Todd, our little dog Scout, who I have to mention first because he is obviously our firstborn, and then our recent addition Marla, and she is 9 weeks old. So yeah, I'm a mum, which is crazy.
You are a mum.
I guess a little bit about me. I work largely in social media, so some of you may have followed, some of you may not, but I share my life as an amputee. So I lost my leg to cancer when I was 8, and I guess that's worth mentioning because it probably plays into my birth story and pregnancy story quite a lot. I had a rotationplasty amputation, so for those driving, they can Google that later because it's easier to Google than me try to explain, but it definitely caused not as many complications as I thought it would, but definitely some, I guess, differences in my journey. Mm-hmm. So definitely worth mentioning that. But yeah, I basically share my differences in my journey for a living, really.
Yeah, amazing. Awesome. And why don't we start with what the journey to pregnancy was like for you and Todd?
Definitely a little bit rocky, as I alluded to before. I had always thought maybe that would be the case, because I had, you know, pretty aggressive cancer and chemo, and even after I had finished treatment, even though I was young, they alluded to the fact that they weren't sure how that would affect my fertility or my cycle or anything like that. And so I always had that in the back of my head. And then on top of that, I'd always had quite weird periods, quite painful periods. I went on the pill really young because my periods were making me miss school, and yeah, I had a lot of issues with that. So as I got older and understood my cycle, I started to think, well, maybe mine's not super normal. So Todd and I started trying reasonably early into our relationship because we knew we were going to be together, and I kind of had that in the back of my head that it might be a bit rocky, but you obviously always hope it's not going to be. So we started trying, I think it was about the September of 2021, and I did a whole lot of kind of preconception care just to give myself the best odds that I could, and then it got to about the 6-month mark and we still weren't pregnant, which isn't a huge amount of time, but I remember people saying, like, if you get to about that time, you could start looking into things. And my periods just kept getting worse and worse in terms of pain. So I kind of put two and two together, and I was seeing some experts at the time who alluded to maybe there was something going on. So I got connected with an incredible gynecologist who rushed me in quite quickly for endometriosis surgery or discovery surgery. So yeah, that was 6 months into our trying to conceive journey, and I ended up having stage 2 endo that they removed, which was a mix of emotions. And I think others kind of have mentioned they felt the same. I weirdly felt relieved to have a diagnosis because there was a reason that maybe it was part of our fertility issues, and also just answered kind of my whole life of period pain. So yeah, I was diagnosed with endometriosis, and then we were kind of given the green light to keep trying whenever we were ready. And we actually jumped back on the horse quite quickly because we really wanted to get a little baby. And we fell pregnant about 4 months after my endo surgery, so 9 months into our trying journey, but unfortunately that ended in an early miscarriage for us. I think I was about 5 or 6 weeks when I miscarried, and that was really hard. I mean, obviously it's a really hard thing to go through, but for also we'd been trying, you know, for 9 months at that point, and then, you know, finally we got there, and then to lose that baby was really, really hard. I was also admitted into hospital because my bleeding was pretty aggressive, so it was just quite a scary time. And yeah, I kind of felt okay emotionally, but then I realized looking back for probably a good 6 months I was quite numb, and yeah, it was a really obviously hard time. And on the one part, I felt really sad that we'd lost something we'd kind of worked really hard to get and wanted so badly. But then on the other hand, I felt relieved that I knew that my body could get pregnant, because after the chemo, I wasn't sure if that was possible. So yeah, it was a weird time and a weird mix of emotions. And I was hopeful because everyone said, you know, after you miscarry, you often get pregnant quite quickly. So I was like, okay, cool. Like every month just felt even more intense that we got a negative test. And it ended up taking, I think that pregnancy was around July 22, and then we kept trying and got pregnant, and was that the March of 23 was when we fell pregnant with Marla. So it was another kind of long period of time, and it really took a huge toll on both of our mental health, but definitely mine. You're just, you know, constantly waiting for something that you don't know when it's going to happen. And we, during all of that, we got engaged and ended up deciding to get married quite quickly within about 5 months, just because we knew we were going to probably start intervening and we wanted to kind of get the wedding under our belt. So we'd booked in to have IUI the month after our wedding, which was April last year. And then, yeah, we found out exactly 12 weeks before our wedding that I was pregnant, which was so surreal. And yeah, just honestly, we were trying for almost 2 years at that point, and obviously had a loss in that, and you're still a shock when you get a pregnancy test. It's so crazy. But the timing was just uncanny with the wedding, and so that was really exciting. But the start of that pregnancy was pretty scary. I had a few bouts of heavy bleeding, and my gynecologist was incredible and got us in for early scans just to make sure things were okay. And there were a few days that I spent on the couch kind of convinced it was over because I was bleeding so heavy. But ended up obviously being okay, which is really awesome. And yeah, my North Star moment in that was that we'd tell our extended family and friends at our wedding. So I just kind of kept holding on to that moment. And yeah, that ended up happening, which was really exciting. So yeah, a bit of a rocky road for us, but we got there in the end, which is awesome.
Amazing. And how were you feeling? Like, I know you said you had some heavy bleeds, in your pregnancy with Marla early on. How were you feeling outside of the bleeds? Like, did you have many other pregnancy symptoms?
I had almost none, which was crazy and still crazy to think about. I was obviously a bit tired. My boobs were sore, but I get sore boobs around my cycle anyway. And, you know, I was a bit hungry. My skin started to break out and my guts were a bit haywire, which isn't uncommon for me. So nothing was that unusual. I didn't really get morning sickness. And even my tiredness wasn't too extreme. And I think that also kind of made it hard for those first 12 weeks because I didn't actually feel pregnant. I almost wanted to be sick because then I knew that it was still there. So that was really tough. And the anxiety, I think everyone, I imagine a lot of people experience this, but especially when you've been through loss, just going to the toilet each time. I think for my whole pregnancy, I checked the toilet paper after I've been toilet every time because you just, even up until 30 weeks, I was just convinced something was kind of going to go wrong. So I guess emotionally I was feeling pretty anxious and scared, but physically I was really lucky. I still remember I was able to eat like eggs, which I feel like if you've got morning sickness, that's probably the last thing you feel like. And I was really excited one day to get pregnant, and I was like, oh, I'm just gonna eat 2 minute noodles and just like embrace that life. Yet I wasn't like sick enough to want that, but I just had it anyway because I was like, I'm pregnant, I need to embrace this. But yeah, the whole 12 weeks I didn't really get cravings or anything, so I was really fortunate with that.
Amazing. And did you go, how did you decide what to do for your care? Like, did you want to go for a midwife or an OB? What were your sort of thoughts there?
We went with an OB. We talked about it a lot in our kind of trying to conceive journey, and I think just with my medical history and my leg, I felt safer going down that route. And I'd already planned in that first pregnancy which obstetrician clinic I wanted to go to. We went to Origins, which I really, really enjoyed, and we had an amazing obstetrician there. So yeah, I chose a obstetrician, which was the right decision for us. And I think, you know, if we have more kids, it's definitely something I want to do again. I do have a bit of anxiety, and I found my obstetrician, he was really amazing in the way that he just debunked all the things that people kind of stress about, and that really, really helped my anxiety throughout pregnancy and birth. So I loved that, and I just felt safe with my medical history. He was able to connect with my surgeon who had done my amputation, and I just I felt he already knew him. It just felt like the right place for us, and I loved that.
Awesome. And did you share, like, because I know you sort of talked earlier about how you share like a lot of your life on social media, so did you share your initial pregnancy loss, and then when did you share your pregnancy with Marla?
I took quite a lot of time off without saying why. When we had our first miscarriage, I just needed space. And it's a weird thing when your job is to share your life online. And as much as I'm an open book, I'm an open book about specific things. And we hadn't really shared that we were trying for a baby or anything like that. So I just wasn't really ready to share that. I can't remember when I did end up sharing, but eventually, actually, I think it was once I got pregnant with Marla, I shared the journey that we had been on in a small amount, because as much as I do like privacy sometimes, I also know my whole mission is to normalize different and different experiences, and I always want to make people feel less alone. So I knew that in sharing our story, it was an important part. And at that stage, I was sharing a lot about endometriosis, and I feel like that kind of was a part of our journey. So I did open up online, and it was incredible just seeing how many people had been through similar experiences or just needed someone to connect with, and it helped me as much as it apparently helped them. It's always nice to feel less alone. So yeah, I did end up sharing about that, and then we kept our pregnancy quiet until I was about 20 weeks, which was just because I wanted to be in our own little love bubble on our own. And it was just really nice to have that for Todd and I. I felt, I, as I said, I am, as much as I'm an open book, I am kind of private about what I share about my family or my partner, and so just sharing about another human being felt really strange. But yeah, it was nice to keep that private for a while, and then at 20 weeks, yeah, we shared that news online, which was really exciting.
Awesome. Cool. And what about like all of the testing that's offered to you in New Zealand? Did you do all of the standard testing? Did you do anything else like through your OB? And did you want to know the sex of your baby?
Yeah, we did. It's funny how much you completely forget pregnancy the second that you have a baby. I feel like that was like a whole nother person's life. But we did the NIPT test. We decided we wanted to do that early on, largely, I guess, for the gender and also just for any other checks. So yeah, we did that and found out the gender 2 days before our wedding. So we'd told our immediate family that we were having a baby, but we had lied to them before the wedding and said we didn't know the gender, so that when we announced the pregnancy, they also had a little surprise at our wedding. So
Cute.
yeah, we just got the envelope, and then we went and got some takeaways and sat at a beach that we like going to and just opened the envelope, really. And yeah, then announced, I guess, the gender to the wider fam at the wedding. So it was really a really special moment, and we have both on camera because our wedding was obviously being filmed. So that was really a really special thing to have. So yeah, we did those tests, and they're such nerve-wracking tests to do, but and very expensive, but I'm really glad that we did that. What other tests do you do? We had the usual scans. We had a lot more scans than normal just because of that initial bleeding, and then also going through an obstetrician, we had kind of regular scans at the clinic there. So yeah, we did all of that.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. And what about birth education? Like, did you have many thoughts around doing antenatal classes or anything else to sort of get you in the mindset for birth?
Yes, I wanted to do everything. I mean, I was already fascinated by birth. I'd seen my sister go through her first birth. Not, I wasn't there, but I was kind of, we're really close, so I was kind of emotionally there. And I was had been listening to Kiwi Birth Tales for probably a year before I even thought about getting pregnant, and then throughout our whole journey. So I felt like I already knew a lot from there. And I even remember people being like, "Oh, you won't learn much from antenatal class," and I thought I was pretty clued up given how many birth stories I've listened to, but I was actually quite impressed that we still learned different things. I think when you're actually in the moment and you're pregnant, you learn things. So yeah, we went through Nest, which was kind of a local one for us, and did antenatal class, which I also just really enjoyed. I think we just wanted to be pregnant so bad to be able to do all of these things I've heard other people doing was really, really cool. I also did your birth project, which was something that my sister had done. So I always knew that I wanted to do that because I think I am also quite a holistic person in my health. I like, I seek out medical, I guess, advice and all of that when I need to, because I've been in that world for so long. But I also just love the more holistic approach, or the, I don't know, bringing in your mental well-being and all of that into healthcare. And so I kind of felt like I missed out on that a little bit by going through an obstetrician, because it does feel like a slightly more medical route opposed to midwifery. It does feel like you get a little bit more of that kind of, I don't know, holistic approach is the best way I can explain it. So doing your birth project felt like that kind of for me, even though there was a bit of both in there, it felt like, you know, just the breathing techniques and those kind of things, it kind of meant that I got a little bit of both. So I loved doing that. I made Todd do it with me because I was like, you are going to be an exceptional birth partner and you have to sit down and listen to all of this, which I think was really great for us because it set up a whole lot of conversations that we might not have had otherwise about our expectations. And yeah, it was really awesome. So yeah, I did your birth project. And what else did I do? I ordered, I love books, but I don't often read them. I just buy them. So I ordered all of these books and I really only read one that resonated with me, which was Expecting Better. I really, really found that helpful because, again, I do live with a bit of anxiety and that book just really kind of debunked a whole lot of things. So I loved reading that. And yeah, I kind of just listen to birth tales all day long. It's kind of a running joke with Todd and I. I'd listen to it. And then if it was one that I thought was similar to maybe our journey, I would make him listen to it as well. So that's kind of how I educated myself.
Yeah, awesome. And did that give you a perspective on how you wanted your birth to go? Like, did you have a plan or, yeah, thoughts around what type of birth you wanted?
Yeah, I kind of left it to the universe a little bit because I felt like it was a little bit out of my control just with my body and how it kind of differs. And so we had some big combos with our obstetrician, and I think my biggest fear, again, it will probably be easier if people have had a little Google or a stalk on my Instagram what a rotationplasty is, because it is a more complicated amputation. But and also I'm one of the only in New Zealand with it. I think there's about 9 of us, and I was one of the first to have it done, so there isn't anyone ahead of me that I can look to who has had a baby. I'm now the first to have a baby in New Zealand with that, so it was new territory for me and my obstetrician and the whole medical team. So I didn't know, and my amputation site is all around my pelvis, so obviously that's impacted when you give birth, and I couldn't quite imagine how that was going to work. So I actually reached out to some others overseas who have had babies and who have had a rotationplasty and saw how they went about it. And the feat that all of them had had mixed birth, some of them had had a vaginal birth and some of them had a cesarean, but none of them had come to that result because of their leg. It was due to other complications. So that was quite empowering for me to be like, oh, maybe I can give this a go. Like, the dream was definitely a vaginal birth, but I never wanted to have a vaginal birth if it meant that I was going to impact my leg long term and therefore I couldn't be the mum that I wanted to be. So it was definitely in the back of my mind. And then we had a big convo about it with the OB, and he seeked advice from my original medical team from the amputation, and they said they don't see that birth could affect my leg, but you couldn't guarantee that, whereas with a cesarean we could guarantee that it wouldn't impact my leg. So we nearly chose to do an elective, and then I just decided I felt in my gut that I really wanted to give it a go and just leave it to the universe and see what happens. So that's where we landed, and I guess it was nice to kind of come to that decision, but I definitely had a little bit of fear in the back of my mind about just navigating something that no one else has navigated before. It was a little bit scary, but I tried to just let go of that and embrace what was ahead.
And did your amputation cause any like other complications in pregnancy? Like, was there any pain that you had associated, you know, from growing in pregnancy and all of that sort of stuff? Was there any anything else that came along with that?
Surprisingly, not really. Like, pregnancy was the highlight of my life. And like, a little bit of context, I was really, really active from kind of high school right up until about 5 years ago, like insanely active. And but then 5 years ago, I kind of went through a few injuries and have never really regained my strength again. So I've been dealing with a lot of pain and a lot of issues in my body. And so even when we were trying for a baby and times were a bit hard, I had moments where I was like, should I be doing this? Like, should we maybe just not have kids? Because I was so nervous about A, how pregnancy was going to impact my body, but also how I was going to have the challenges that I have and then also parent and be a mom. So I definitely had a lot of doubt in that and a lot of fear around pregnancy. And one of my biggest issues in that 5 years was swelling. I spent about 2 years where the the part of my body that I put into my prosthetic swelled to the point where most days I couldn't put on my legs. So I was really limited in my abilities, and I knew swelling was a huge thing in pregnancy. So I was so scared that that was going to come back because I'd just gotten rid of it. And surprisingly, I didn't swell at all the whole pregnancy, not even post-birth, which was incredible. Like Todd and I had already planned that I would most likely be on crutches, if not in a wheelchair, if not potentially bedridden, especially in my third trimester. And we'd kind of pre-planned for that to be the case, but it never really happened. So I was really, lucky. I think winter, being a winter pregnancy, really helped. Summer's really, really challenging for me with my legs. So I think that was on our side. But yeah, I don't know if it was, you know, how your ligaments, like the relaxin goes through your body. I don't know if that's what really helped me, but my challenges weren't any greater in pregnancy than they are outside of pregnancy, which was a huge blessing. And it gave me so much confidence. I remember having a conversation with Todd because those 5 years had been really tough for me, and I lost a lot of confidence in my abilities. And then to be able to go through an experience that so many people go through and be able to do it kind of the same in a quote unquote normal capacity felt really awesome. To just not have, I was so used to having extra challenges all the time, which obviously I still had, but for me it was still just normal, which was really, really encouraging and gave me a huge confidence boost. But so I was really fortunate that pregnancy didn't really impact my body too much, which still just baffles me a lot. It was awesome.
Yeah, cool. Amazing. And take us through like the end stage of your pregnancy. So how were you feeling at that very sort of last final week of being pregnant? Were you doing anything to like try and prepare for labor or for birth? And talk us through that end stage of pregnancy.
Again, it's crazy how that seems like a lifetime ago, even though it was only 9 weeks ago. It was, the end of the pregnancy was still going really well. Baby was tracking really good. I ended up intervening in all the ways I possibly, well, not intervening, but using all the things, the dates, the teas, everything. I was really hopeful that I would be able to go into labor naturally. That was my goal, is to do that, because I knew that I wasn't sure how birth was going to go, and I really ideally wanted to just experience labor. Was kind of the dream for me. So I tried everything. I was doing acupuncture, which I do anyway, and I was seeing an osteopath, which I again do outside of being pregnant, but they were kind of focusing on more of the pre-birth things. I was trying to do some curb walking, definitely challenging as an amputee, but I was trying to do that, and I ended up doing the mile circuit quite a lot. I quite enjoyed doing that. I had to adapt it a little bit again for my body, but I did that to try induce labor. And then we did end up having a stretch and sweep as well, which I thought helped. We came home and I ended up having a few contractions or contractiony kind of feelings, and then it went away, so that didn't really do anything, which was a bummer. But yeah, towards the end I was feeling really good. I was emotionally feeling a bit unusual. I was kind of sad to see the bump go and to have that period of my life over. I think I was really aware of the fact that having your first baby is such a line in the sand of your life, of like parent versus not a parent. it's a huge moment, obviously. I think I was just really emotionally aware of that. So I had a few meltdowns, even though I was so happy to be meeting our baby soon and to enter that part of my life. It felt really weird letting go of a pregnancy that I'd enjoyed so much, and that time just went so fast. And I was really excited for birth, which surprised me given the nerves I did have about my differences. But I was just really excited for that to happen. And my sister had her second baby 3 months exactly before me, so I just kind of watched that whole phase, and then to enter it myself was pretty incredible.
Cool. And before we get into your birth story, can you talk us through your name journey? So how did you land with Marla? Did you know that you wanted to call her that before she was born, or did you wait till after? Talk us through your name journey.
Oh, I love baby names. It's a weird passion of mine. Like if I find out someone's had a baby, I'm like, what's its name? I need to know.
Yeah.
Oh, so fun. But Marla came about. We'd obviously been talking about names for a long time while we were trying. It was kind of like our happy moment. If a month went badly, I'd focus on what will I call my baby in the future, just as like a something to focus my brain on. And Todd actually came up with Marla. I think we were watching TV. It was before, it was while maybe, yeah, while we were trying. And a kid was on the TV called Marlo, and he was like, "Do you like the name Marlo?" And I was like, "Yeah, I really like that name." And then he was like, "What about Marla?" And I was like, that's such a cool name. I hadn't really heard of it before. And so it went to the top of our name list quite quickly. And it was Todd was sold on it, whereas I had another name that I'd always liked that I think we'll save for a second baby if we have one. And so we kind of kept going back and forth on the two, but something about Marla just felt right, and we could see that being our oldest baby, our oldest child if we have more. Yeah, it just felt right. And my nana passed away during lockdown, and her middle name, oh, sorry, her name is Jan, which is my mum's middle name too. And so her name's Marla Jan, which I just thought sounded really beautiful. So yeah, we were stuck on it probably since halfway through pregnancy, but every weekend I'd be like, "Are you sure you don't like my name better?" Just in case. But even though it was the name that I liked, I just, yeah, Marla just felt right for us. So we were pretty much set on that, although she was Peach during the whole pregnancy. So we referred to her as Peach so much to the point that it felt unusual to call her Marla. It took me probably 3 weeks at the beginning to like transition away from her nickname. Because we, yeah, a few people actually thought we were going to call her Peach. It had stuck so much. But no, she's Marla, and it's funny when you have a baby. I now She just does not look like our second name. She's definitely a Marla.
You can't imagine them as something else, right?
No, it's so strange. So yeah, that was our journey to her name. But honestly, I wish I could have 100 babies just so I could name them all.
I know, I'm obsessed with like all of these different like TikTok accounts and Instagram accounts that
Same.
post like names that match with the first kid's names. I'm like,
Yeah.
oh my gosh, I could do that for a job.
Me too.
So cool.
That's so cool.
Awesome. And okay, so let's jump into it. Take us through, that very final stage of your pregnancy and into your birth story.
This gets me so excited. It's funny. I just had my Warren of Fitness with my I see a vagina physio who I saw pre-pregnancy and during pregnancy, and now for my Warren of Fitness post. And I was telling her how much I love birth, and I was just so excited about it, and even our birth story. And it's just like, "So I'll see you in 10 months' time then," because I was just like so excited about it. But
I
no.
love it.
So yeah, we what was I? I was. I can't remember when we had our stretch and sweep. It was about a week before. So I think about 39 weeks, I had a stretch and sweep with the OB. As I said, I thought that was going to go somewhere, and it didn't, which was fine. And he was under the his kind of approach is that if one stretch and sweep doesn't work, there's no point doing some more, which I know everyone has a different approach, but that was his. And I was happy with that. So we didn't do any further stretch and sweeps. We just went in every few days kind of for monitoring and just to see how baby was doing. And she was doing really well. She was head down, engaged, ready to go. And you know, I'd been getting cramping probably for a month beforehand. It wasn't really Braxton Hicks. It was kind of just like the day before your period feeling, and that kind of kept going on. So I'd get excited. And then yeah, it rolled around to 40, and 4 was the day she was born, I think. So about 40 and 2, we'd found out the day before that my OB was actually off for the whole weekend and also taking her to a 1 week holiday the next week. And I was like, "Oh no." And we'd built such a great relationship with him. I was so nervous. And so I really hoped that she was going to come. But we started to look at an induction for the Monday, which would be with someone else, but we locked it in just because we were kind of heading down that path. And just with my pelvis and my leg, they didn't want me to go too far over. She was also tracking to have quite a large head, so yeah, we didn't want to go too far. So we had that booked in for the Monday. And then I said to baby girl, I was like, "Look, if you want to have Nick birth you need to come before Monday." And she listened. So yeah, 40 and 4, which I think was the Wednesday, I woke up at 2 a.m. with just crazy period pain. I have really bad endo pain, as I mentioned, so it kind of just felt like that to me. It wasn't rhythmic, it was just really intense pain. And yeah, that was around, I think, around 2 a.m. And then by about 4 a.m., it was pretty rhythmic. It felt like, okay, maybe this is happening. You still just don't want to get excited, but it definitely felt like something was happening. And then I got up around 6 a.m. just because I couldn't really take it anymore. Went and hung out in the lounge for a while, and I think Todd kept sleeping from memory just because I was like, okay, you need to be fueled because I'm not going to sleep, so you get as much sleep as you can. And then while he was sleeping, they all, my contractions slowed down quite a lot, and that was such a bummer because I just was like, oh, maybe it isn't happening. And then throughout that day, we just kind of went about our day as normal as you possibly can with in the back of your head that you're about to have a baby. It's such a weird feeling, but you know, we kind of tried to go for a walk, and my family kind of came in and out of coming over just to give us some company. And they kept stopping and starting, but even when they would start, my contractions just didn't quite get to the point where they were overnight. So yeah, that was a little bit disheartening. I'd done my everything shower because in the morning I was like, this is clearly the day my contractions are here. So I did my full everything shower, and I had to have another one later on because it didn't ever eventuate. But yeah, we just continued throughout that day. And then the funniest thing about this is Todd has jotted down our, I said, can you take notes of our labor just so I can look back on it one day? And he is a very A-type personality, and he took some serious notes. Like, one of the notes is literally like, 5 a.m. got up and got Jess peanut butter on toast. Like, the notes are hilarious. But anyway, I went to bed at about 9 o'clock that evening, and I was like, oh, this is not happening. And then literally the second I got into bed, they just ramped up like crazy, to the point that I didn't go back to sleep. So yeah, my contractions were from back again from about 9 p.m. till through the night. So I can't even remember them. I used the TENS machine, which was really, really helpful. We'd hired that through our antenatal, and just focused on the TENS and my breathing as much as possible. But yeah, I didn't sleep because that was really, really painful. And then we'd spoken to our OB during that day just to get a roundabout idea of what they expected from us and when they wanted to see us. And he had said, ideally, when things are about 5 minutes apart, give us a call. And at about 3 a.m., or I think it was about 2 a.m., things were ramping up a lot, but they were still only about 7 minutes apart. But I just felt a shift, like something changed. And it was a weekday. We live about 30 minutes from Auckland Hospital where we were birthing, but in traffic, it could be over an hour. So at 3 a.m., I was like, we've only got 3 hours until peak hour traffic really hits. And I obviously wanted to avoid that. So, and I'd started vomiting as well. And yeah, Todd just also noticed a shift. So at about 3 a.m., he called the OB and just said, look, I think, you know, we should probably come in. And the OB agreed. And I was really nervous because I'd heard, I think maybe through some birth stories on your podcast, that often when you get in the car and when you get to the hospital, it slows down a bit. And I was like, oh, if I'm 7, then it's only going to slow down even more. But the complete opposite happened. By the time I was in the car, they were 5 minutes apart. And then we arrived at the hospital and my OB was like, Todd, I thought you said they were far apart, because at that point they were about 3 minutes apart. So they'd ramped up a lot. But the drive was actually pretty good. Again, I just focused on my breathing a lot, and my TENS machine. And yeah, we arrived at the hospital. They had the room already set up for us, which was amazing. Those birth rooms are incredible. And they did a check on me, and I was 4 centimeters and fully effaced, which was pretty good. I was, my biggest fear was coming, getting to the hospital and only being like 1 centimeter. But obviously the pain I was in, I was like, oh, 4 centimeters, we've got a while to go. And then my OB recommended that they break my water. He did a check and he could tell that it was really thick, the sac, I guess. And then he ended up, and I agreed, and he ended up breaking it for me. And even him using the little prong that they use, he said it, he had to give it.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
few goes. It was just really, really thick. And he said that it was a good thing that we'd chosen to get it broken by someone else, because he thinks it wouldn't have broken on its own and probably would have caused some issues. So yeah, that was good that we got that done. And then they started mentioning epidural, and epidurals throughout my whole pregnancy, even prior to pregnancy, were my biggest fear out of everything. I'm not really sure why. I know everyone says like you can't even feel it, they're totally fine, but I just had this massive fear around them. I think just someone injecting something into your spine just absolutely freaked me out. And I think I had one when I was younger, but I think I was already asleep when they did it. So yeah, it really scared me. And so I put it off and I put it off and I put it off. But I also knew that I did want it. I was one of my biggest fears with my leg. My nerves are really unusual around my amputation site. And I was really scared that if I did birth vaginally, my fear of the head kind of coming past that area would impact that. So I thought the epidural was probably going to be the best thing for me. So I ended up getting the epidural. Our obstetrician had told us that you could do that privately, and because I was so scared, I just was happy to pay anything to get an epidural done. So we actually got it done privately, and this guy, you call him, he arrives in 15 minutes and does your epidural, and then it's done. And yeah, it was pretty incredible, because I've heard of people who, you know, you have to wait quite some time. So we were really lucky that that happened quickly. And yeah, I hate to be the person that says it's really not that bad, but it really isn't bad at all. Putting the cannula in my arm was so much more painful than the epidural. So I'm really glad I did that. I'd 100% do it again. So that helped a lot. And then I just chilled. It's so funny. We had done a birth playlist. We had downloaded movies to watch at the hospital. We had just got all the snacks, like everything. I didn't touch a single thing. I admittedly wasn't allowed to eat, but we didn't watch a single movie. We didn't even put on music. So I realized for, I think it was 8 hours, I just sat in this hospital room looking at the wall. It was so weird in hindsight, thinking that I just sat there, but I did. And yeah, Todd kind of slept off and on. We had a midwife in our room the whole time, and the obstetrician, he only comes back kind of if you call him. So yeah, we just had the midwife, which was awesome. And baby girl's heart rate was tracking beautifully the whole time. It was awesome. So that was nice to just not be nervous about her, really. And then I started feeling quite a lot of pressure. And so they checked me again. Also, I had the oxytocin drip, because once I got to the hospital, after they broke my waters, my contractions did slow down, which was weird. So they gave me some oxytocin, which I was happy with, just to keep things progressing. And then, yeah, I think around lunchtime, maybe it was, I felt a whole lot of pressure, and my midwife checked me, and I'd had a bloody show. And I remember she told me afterwards, she was like, oh, I thought this was, you know, this was it, this was the moment. And sorry, prior an hour to that, before that, she'd checked me, and I was 6 centimeters. And my cervix was, she called it paper thin, so I think that was a good thing. And then when she checked me, when I had the bloody show, my cervix was no longer thin, and it had become really thick and swollen, and I hadn't progressed from the 6 centimeters. So things shifted really quickly. I just felt the mood in the room change. My midwife was like, I'm just going to go call the OB. And she went and called him. And then, yeah, she came back in, and she just had this look on her face where I was like, I know this is exactly what you're going to say. And she basically said that they think that we'll probably have to have a cesarean. And Nick was on his way. Sorry, my OB. And yeah, he arrived 15 minutes later. And it is insane how fast they pull together a cesarean. So they called it an emergency cesarean, but it wasn't like a red light rush. But that was a weird moment. I was happy however our birth went, because for me, like, I'd always expected I was going to have a cesarean, so I'd already come so much further than I thought I would ever go. And so yeah, I was happy with we were also paying for his advice, and his advice was that, so I didn't want to go against that. And I was at that point really happy for her to come. I think by the time I had the cesarean, I'd been in labor for 35 hours, so it was pretty long. And he said, you know, like, we didn't really have a choice. It was how she was going to have to come out. So I was happy to have that, but I instantly, once Todd got in his scrubs, I just burst into tears and hysterically cried right up until probably she was born. Probably up until they started the cesarean, because I was just so scared about the fact that they were going to cut me and I was going to feel that. I just had so much fear around that, to the point where I obviously already already had the epidural, but when they did the prick and the ice chest, they kept being like, can you feel this? And I was like, I think I can. And I made them put the epidural in again, or like insert more in about four times, because I was just so nervous to the point where I definitely had way too much going on. But yeah, it was just, I was just so scared. And it was, I think also I've had a million surgeries and obviously a lot of quite traumatic ones. And so to be in a theatre environment and it to be for something positive was just a really strange thing for me to wrap my head around, because I think I, my subconscious obviously has a lot of trauma associated to theatre and to a surgical space. But then to be there to meet our baby was just, it just felt really strange for my brain to wrap my head around. So I think my emotions were also just a sense of overwhelm, and the fact that we were about to meet our baby was just, it's just the most insane feeling. But the cesarean was incredible. Like, I just look back on my birth and think it was the most amazing thing. I loved the cesarean, the team. Like, just, I actually listened to Meg's podcast, Meg from The Edge, and she, I remember she said something about how they just treat you like you're a five-year-old in the most beautiful way ever. And when she said that, I was like, that is exactly how I felt. It just, like, they just give you so much care when you're in that theatre space. And oh, I just have so much respect for all the nurses and the surgical team. It was, really incredible. And, so baby girl was born pretty quickly, and it was a very surreal moment.
Amazing. And you didn't feel it? There was no pain? Did you feel anything at all?
I felt nothing. Oh, sorry. Yes, sorry. That's not true. You feel the pulling and the tugging, and what people, my sister had cesareans as well, and what she had explained is exactly right. It just feels like someone's tugging through a handbag that is your insides. The one thing I hadn't expected at one point, I was like to Nick, I was like, it feels like you're popping a large pimple on my stomach. Like, he's like trying to like push the baby's head out, like it's if he's trying to pop this pimple. It was the most unusual feeling, but it's not painful. It's just surreal that, and I just kept saying to Todd, I was like, Todd, distract me, because I just couldn't think about the fact that I was open and awake at the same time. And poor Todd, he was like, I've never struggled so hard to have conversation with you. He just, like, he was also obviously stressed and overwhelmed. He was like, I need to distract her, but I don't know what to say. So no, I didn't feel anything, but it's still just that unusual tugging feeling. And the team were incredible. They kept counting down. They're like, 5 minutes till you meet your baby, 2 minutes. Then it was like 20 seconds till you meet your baby. And then he pulls her up and she just peed all over his arm, which was hilarious. And yeah, just to see your baby was just the most surreal feeling. And she was 9 pounds, which was not what we thought. I had quite a small bump, and she was also tracking definitely not, like, she wasn't tracking small, but she wasn't tracking that big. Even our OB was like, I was not expecting that. So yeah, she was a very long and very reasonably large baby. But yeah, it was pretty surreal. It still feels so weird that happened to us.
And when they like pulled her out, you obviously see her. What happened next? Like, do you remember the steps from like cutting the cord to getting her on you, or like, did they wrap her first, did they weigh her, what sort of happened after she was born?
They took her away. I remember again listening to some of your podcasts, and I meant to have the conversation that maybe I could have her on my chest first, or maybe Todd could cut the cord and all those beautiful things, but I had kind of just forgotten to mention all of that. So they happened before I met her, and honestly I was fine with that, because whatever needed to happen had to happen. And so once she was born and the cord was cut by the team, Todd was able to go straight away with her, and they did all the ways. And it's such a weird feeling. You're just so stuck on this bed and all you can hear is your baby screaming. And it's, and you haven't really properly met them. It's quite a weird feeling. Like, I felt excited, but also sad that I wasn't there and like with her, but obviously happy that Todd was. So yeah, they did all of that. I imagine that took maybe about 5 minutes. Time feels weird when you're in a theater room, but it was reasonably quick and everything was good, which was awesome. And then they came and brought her over onto my chest. They kind of just ripped my gown off quickly and got my boobs out. And I think we tried to latch her straight away, from memory. And I think she's had a great latch from the get-go, which was awesome. So she latched a little bit and we just lay there, and she's had the strongest neck from day one. So she just spent the whole time they were stitching me up, just with her neck up, just looking around at the room. It was, yeah, the craziest thing to see. And yeah, we just snuggled for ages, and Todd and I just said 1,000 times how crazy it is that she's our baby. And then, yeah, they put her in her little plastic bassinet thing. And then they wheeled us into recovery. And yeah, that also feels like such a blur. I was reasonably delusional by that point, given my lack of sleep and what we'd just gone through. But yeah, we tried to latch her properly that time and give her a bit of a feed. And yeah, and then I FaceTimed my mom first. And it was, yeah, a pretty special emotional moment. Just I hadn't told my mom that we were calling her middle name after my nana. And yeah, that was very emotional and amazing. And I thought my mom was with my sister, so I was like, I'm gonna FaceTime my mom, and I knew she'd be emotional about it, but it turns out she was in the middle of the wall. I didn't realize time had passed and she wasn't with my sister anymore. So I made my poor mom have a meltdown in the mall. But yeah, so then we made our way through the fam and called them and introduced her to Marla. And yeah, we're eventually taken up to our ward.
Yeah, amazing. And do you remember like the feeling afterwards, like how long did it take before they tried to get you to like stand up and like take your catheter out and do all of that stuff after a cesarean? How did you find that?
I found like the actual recovery from the cesarean I found fine. We didn't have the best care at the hospital, to be honest. I think it was the classic story of being a bit understaffed, unfortunately, and just a whole mix of opinions, which some were definitely probably not correct. Like, we got told that we had to take shifts being awake to watch the baby, so neither of us could sleep at the same time, which was, in hindsight, you know that that's not correct, because once you get home, you obviously sleep at the same time, but you're just, you've just had a baby, you just listen to anyone's kind of advice. We were also in a shared room, and yeah, it was all just, we're in a really crammed room. It was quite all just a bit weird, and I was so delusional by that point. I started kind of hallucinating a little bit, because I think I was 42 hours of no sleep and food at that point. But yeah, and I think, so I was on all the painkillers, and I was connected to the morphine drip, which apparently is just a top up. And then for about 10 hours with a shift change, we got moved to a private room quite down the hallway. And I think during that change, I didn't get handed over properly, and they skipped my pain meds for about 10 hours. So when they came to get me out of bed, which I was already really nervous about being an amputee, I'm not the most stable anyway, and my leg was feeling a bit unusual after the cesarean. When they came to get me out of bed, that was pretty painful. So I think that was the next morning. So maybe less than 24 hours after she was born, I'd say. And yeah, that was my birthday. So Marla was born the day before my birthday, which was pretty crazy. So yeah, the next day was my birthday. And yeah, they tried to get me out of bed, and I got there, but yeah, it was pretty sore. And the nurses had said maybe we should stay another night, and we thought that would be a good idea. But then our OB came in and he said, look, I honestly think you're best to get to birth care if you feel comfortable. We were planning on going to birth care down the road, because you're going to have, you know, day two cluster feeding, and you're going to be even more tired, so you're not going to want to leave after that. So you're better to just get there and settle in. So we made the decision to go. So we only had one night in the hospital, which I was quite surprised by after a cesarean, but I think because we were under the care of our OB, I guess he was keeping such a close eye on us that it was okay, because we had him at birth care visiting too. So yeah, we got to birth care. I'm still baffled. I'd seen my sister do it, but I'm still baffled by the fact that you can have such a huge surgery and then just stand like 24 hours later. It just makes no sense in my head. And stand, like, I walked out of the hospital, and it was probably a good 10-minute walk through the hallways, which probably shouldn't have done, but I did. And just the fact that that was, you know, 24 hours after having such a huge surgery, it's pretty incredible what the body is capable of.
I always think that, I'm like, because I've had a cesarean birth too, and I was actually talking to my sister-in-law about it. I was like, it is insane that you can have a surgery where, like, you literally birth your baby from the surgery.
So crazy.
And then you are just like up and standing and parenting and doing all the things for your baby, like, straight away. It's just crazy that they're, it is insane.
And I mean, I've never felt that a cesarean is a less than birth of a vaginal. I think both births and all births are absolutely incredible. But the fact that there are some people who think one is better than the other absolutely blows my mind, because what you go through in either of those is mind-blowing. I read a quote that said something like, you lay on a table and let someone cut through six layers of your abdomen while you're awake. Like, that is not the easy way out, you know? Like, both are so challenging and also equally can be equally as beautiful. Like, I honestly just would do my birth 100 times over. I loved it. But it does show how incredible the human body is, for sure, and how incredible medicine and surgical people are.
For sure. And so talk us through getting to birth care. How did you find moving from hospital to there? And talk us through the next couple of days.
The birth care was awesome. We were obviously still pretty delusional and trying to learn how to parent, and just feeling surreal that we had a little human right there. But it was really nice just to be in a bit more of a comfortable space and to have our own space, and to our family came and visited a little bit. Birth care feels like a bit of a whirlwind to me, so I don't fully remember it, but the priority for us was for me to recover, and Todd really took over with Marla in terms of the sleeping and the settling. He was one of the many dads pacing the hallways, and I remember him being up through the night quite a lot, so obviously I guess it was that cluster phase. So she would, I think, feed on me, and then he would go and kind of settle her and hang out in the hallway for however long, I'm not sure, I was asleep. But that was really incredible that he kind of took over that. And then at one point Mum came for about most of the day, and he went back to our house and had a sleep and just could catch up a little bit, which was cool. So we juggled that the best we could. It was just incredible having food delivered to you and people there to care for you. I did find the mix, because obviously you have a different midwife at every different shift, and everyone has their own approach and their own opinions, and that definitely became overwhelming, but at the same time I was so grateful to have that, because having gone straight home I couldn't have imagined. Feeding became really challenging and really hard for us. That kind of tainted my birth care experience, just because it was really emotional for me. She was latching great and everything, but I can't remember at what point it started to change, but we realized she wasn't really getting enough, and I think they could see the crystals in her wheeze, which meant she was a bit dehydrated. I guess must have been more into day two, day three. And then they started mentioning that we should supplement her feeding. At the time that just felt really hard for me. I had hoped that I would be able to exclusively breastfeed, but I also was under the illusion of fed is best. But when you're in that moment, I don't know, I just wanted it to happen so badly. I've never really talked about this online or anything, but I had a breast reduction about 5 years ago. And I had always wondered if that would impact my feeding journey, but I had talked to the surgical team and they were like, no, like, it won't at all. If you could breastfeed before, you'll be able to breastfeed after, or whatever. But I had more surgery on one side, and that side pretty much doesn't produce any milk. So it was definitely a result of the surgery for me, I'm pretty sure. So that became just a lot for me to wrap my head around. I was really emotional when we started giving her some formula. More from it wasn't the formula, it was the fact, and I think for me, I know that I have a lot of challenges ahead of me in terms of my abilities as a parent. There's going to be a million things that I can't do, or I'm going to struggle to do a lot. And so I just hoped that breastfeeding was going to be something that could be my thing that I could solely do with her. And it kind of just felt like another ability was taken away from me. And then I think I bit myself up even more, because it was a result of a choice that I'd made, as much as I don't regret that. It was just a lot of emotion for me to wrap my head around. Looking back now, I had some serious days in bed where I just couldn't stop crying. I just felt really sad about that. And again, it wasn't the formula. I think formula's awesome, but it was just another ability that was kind of that I wasn't going to have. That took us a while. And so we were doing some mixed feeding at the hospital, and talking to lots of lactation consultants. I think we saw about three different ones at birth care at the time, and just making a plan for the future and what was ahead. That was our biggest challenge kind of at birth care. But apart from that, it was an awesome experience anyway. It was just obviously a challenge that we had to face.
And so what was the plan for when you left, from a feeding perspective, where were you at when you left birth care?
When we left, we were using the cup and giving her a top up. So I would put her on the boob and then I would pump and Todd would give her the cup, which was just a small amount of formula because she was obviously only tiny. So we only needed like a 10 mil top up. And then the plan was, so with our obstetrician clinic, you then get a post-care midwife for about 4 weeks. And our post-care midwife was coincidentally a lactation consultant. So I knew that we were in the best hands given our situation. So we were kind of transferred into her care, and that we just, I guess, went back and forth, and she'd come over all the time and see how Marla's weight was going because she had lost a bit of weight at birth, post-birth, and we just kept trying to tinker between what my supply was doing and how much formula we would need to make up for, which is quite a hard guessing game, and obviously important in those early days when they need to gain that weight back. I think we got to the point once we'd finished with my midwife at about 4 weeks, we were giving her a 50 mil top up at four different feeds throughout the day, and then every other feed she was just getting what she could from the boob, and I was pumping. So yeah, that was a lot. And then it's just continued the same. I did everything. I joined a Facebook group called Breastfeeding Post Reduction. I did everything. I've been on the Milk Maker supplement, which I have found really awesome. And I looked into things for my diet to add lactation things. And I also considered domperidone, but I have decided not to do that. But we've basically been trying everything, and we're now at the point, she's 9 weeks now, and I'd say she's probably 85 to 90% formula fed. And I'm at a place where I feel really happy with that. She's so happy on it. She's growing, she's healthy. Todd's able to feed her. I've let go of, I guess, the guilt and the emotions and the feelings I had towards it, and have just kind of enjoyed bottle feeding as much. So I still feed her a little bit and I still pump probably about four times a day, but we're just doing what we can, and I think eventually I'll just stop feeding her from the boob and just keep feeding her from the bottle, but we're just taking it each day as it comes at the moment.
There'll be so many people who can resonate to like your story in one way or another about feeding and the guilt, like no matter what the reason is that you might not be able to breastfeed like exclusively or at all. For some people, it's often surrounded in this feeling of guilt or like sadness, or like you've sort of failed. And I feel like that is really not helped by a lot of the information in like social media and different things out there. Like there's just such a narrative of breast is best, and I think that can be really harmful to mental health of mothers who can't exclusively breastfeed. I've seen a lot of your posts over the last like week or so, and I can resonate myself because I had really challenging breastfeeding journeys with both of the boys, and it is a really hard thing to overcome. And I think once you get to a place where you're like, no, my baby's growing, she's healthy, she's like everything is perfect with her, then it's easier to accept, but it can take a really long time to get there.
I so agree. It does take a really long time. And someone said to me that they'd been told this, and it sounds really brutal, but it actually weirdly helped me in that even though your emotions and everything around it are valid, it's kind of I don't like to use the word selfish, but it's like the baby is happy. It's like as long as she's getting milk and she's fed, she's the one that's happy. It's our emotions around feeding or our fear of judgment that is what's going on, you know, which is, as you say, a result of society. And I think also on Instagram you see a picture or a video of a mother breastfeeding and you think that they've had the seamless journey because we assume that one photo makes up their whole life, which is not true. But you know, you don't see a mum often sitting there feeding a bottle. Like I was out in a cafe a few times and I saw a couple babies a similar age getting a bottle, and the relief I would feel that I wasn't on my own was huge. So that's why I just really casually posted her bottle next to my coffee, and I've never had such a flood of messages of people who kind of shared their journey as well, because I think it's just one of those things that you feel like you're alone, but I've actually realized the majority of people seem to have a challenging journey, however and whyever that is. I don't know, it isn't spoken about enough, and I haven't really felt judgment from society, but I've definitely felt the push of breast is best from experts, which I was really surprised by, or professionals. But yeah, and even the formula packets, they say, you know, the disclaimer is that breastfeeding is best for your baby. And it's like, well, that's really hard if it's not something you can do, or something that's good for your mental health, or something that you choose not to do. It's hard to read those or see those things. So yeah,
there's lots of triggers when you're trying to like work through the sort of mental health stage or like part of a breastfeeding journey. There's just it's triggers everywhere, so I can definitely relate. And yeah, I think it's amazing that you are sharing online, because like you said, there's so many people who have like a different or challenging experience, but they still only see like that highlight photo. I remember like after my birth with Ali, and I wasn't even breastfeeding anymore, but this brand wanted to work with me to take a photo with him on my breast. And I was like, but I'm not breastfeeding him. So that feels like wrong to portray him like that. Like, so I think there'll be lots of people out there who listen to this and feel like heard and like find some comfort in that. So yeah, thank you for sharing.
No worries.
Awesome. And what about your physical recovery from your C-section now? Like, obviously you're 9 weeks down the track. How have you found recovery, pain management, getting back into like moving around and walking and everything like that? How has that journey been?
A lot better than I thought it would be. I just, again, can't believe that they can cut through that many layers of your body and you can recover, can recover well or easily. From a pain perspective, I was quite surprised. I think by the time I got home, I was pretty much just on Panadol. Admittedly, I have had a lot of surgeries, which I think probably helped. I've been around the block, so I can tolerate that unusual feeling of it is just unusual when you have a wound. I was quite surprised. I also thought my abilities would be really really hard, I guess, like even just sitting up in bed and all these kind of things. But once I was home, even though it didn't feel like my normal, it was easier than I thought it was going to be. And obviously I am an amputee, so I have my leg off at certain times, normally just in the night. And if I need to go toilet in the night, I'm crawling. And I just thought maybe that would be really hard with my wound, but it wasn't. So that was really awesome. The recovery has been great. And I don't have a huge activity level to get back to, because I live quite a slower life at the moment with my leg, and as I said, summer's really hard for me, so I'm not able to go for many walks in the heat, but I'm able to get out and about more than I thought. So I've been really surprised by the recovery. It's been more seamless than I thought it would be.
Amazing. And how have you and Todd gone like adjusting to adding a person to your relationship and your family? It's just like such a massive change to go from the two of you to then like having your first baby. So talk us through how you're finding sort of sharing the parenting load with Todd and what the change has been like for you guys.
It's been a lot, honestly. The first, and Todd said that I can speak about this, but the first couple of weeks, maybe 2 to 4, the beginning to about 4 weeks was really rough. Todd, I mean, he wasn't diagnosed with anything, but I'd say he was dealing with definitely postnatal anxiety, which I think not many people speak about that with men, but it really hit him really hard. And that was really hard, because I was in a state of dealing with so much myself, and I hadn't expected the extra factor of, I guess, caring for him and his emotions around it. I'd expected that I'm going to have a lot of emotions and I'm going to be in pain and, you know, we've got our feeding journey, all these different things. I hadn't expected to also have that. So that was really hard, because, you know, you hear of like, I don't know, you see all these things on Instagram. It's like, you fall even more in love with your husband when you see him with your baby, of which I did. But at the same time, he was struggling so much that it was just different from this like fairy tale that is kind of out there. And I think for him, he has a lot more to deal with than other people. Like, he has to carry, I guess, a bigger load than maybe other dads because of my abilities or lack thereof. I remember him saying he was really nervous. He was taking 2 weeks off work, and he was nervous of how he was going to do all of this and then also go back to work. And I think he started to wonder if he was going to be as good of a dad as it, you know, just all of these like doubts that that moms get as well, but he was getting them too. And that was just really hard to adjust to. And I think also just him seeing what I went through. I just can't imagine watching someone go through that. Also would be really hard in terms of the birth and labor and everything. So yeah, it was, that was quite a surprise and quite an adjustment, and we just spoke really openly about it, and we told our midwife about it so that she could keep an eye on him. I think he went on some anti-anxiety meds for a while, which really just for a short period, because he found he kind of took them as he was getting better, so he didn't take them for too long, but they were, they're there if he needed them, which was awesome. And yeah, I just tried to get him to open up as much as possible, but that was definitely a challenge we hadn't expected. And yeah, since then, that probably lasted about 4 weeks, I would say. And then we've just kind of found our groove in terms of sharing the load. We're pretty even, I think. Todd does a lot. He works from home a couple of days a week, which really helps. And we've obviously had the Christmas period, which has been nice. So he's been here a lot. But at the moment, when she wakes up in the night, I put her on the boob and then he'll feed her and go up and make the bottles, because he has two legs and it's just easier for him to do that than for me to put my leg on in the night, which that will change in the future, but we're just trying to drag it out as long as possible to let me kind of fully recover and give me that time, which has been amazing. So he's doing just as much, if not more, to be honest, during the nights and during the days too. He just really takes the things that I struggle to do, or which is amazing. So, and I'm grateful. I'd really love for him to be an equal partner in being a parent. So it's awesome that he's been that involved from the get-go, because it'll just be seamless for him the whole way through. And we're splitting parental leave as well, so I'm doing 3 months and then he's soon taking his 3 months, so he'll be home for that period of time, which is really nice to just again give me that extra support. I have so many appointments during the weeks and just need help carrying her around, so he's here for that, which is really awesome. But in terms of our relationship, I feel like we're back to, I don't want to say back to where we were until we have a new baby, but I feel like we're us again, just with an extra addition, and we're just learning to communicate in different ways and being patient with each other.
Oh my gosh, yes. And I mean, like, it's really important, I think, to talk about the mental health of like the non-birthing parent as well. It's not something that I feel like we cover often, or doesn't get talked about enough for sure, because they also experience like this huge life change. So I think that's really important, and I'm sure there'll be people who listen to this episode and it maybe like prompts them to have a conversation with their partner or think a little bit more about that, which is awesome.
Yeah, I definitely think it's worth doing. You know, we talk about how birth's going to go and how we want to feed our babies, but not maybe the mental health side so much, but definitely can happen.
And has there been anything that you've used like for Marla or for yourself in your recovery that you're like, everybody has to know about this because it is just like super super helpful? Are there any products or anything that you've done that you feel like you'd like to share with others?
What have I used? Flow. I have terrible gut issues before pregnancy and birth, and now post-pregnancy and birth. I didn't think they could get worse, but somehow they have. So Flow, I mean, I've always taken Flow, but I have upped my Flow, that's for sure. Flow, and also I take laxatives as well, because honestly, use the laxatives when they're given to you, because not fun. It just adds another challenge, but Flow is one product that I just absolutely love. It was in my hospital bag. I often do the chewable ones and I smash them like candy. I also got sent the Mama's Milk Bar Electrolyte. I got sent that when I was pregnant, and I have since continued to buy it continuously. I think I've gone through, I think I've purchased like 3 of them already. I have it every single day and did during pregnancy. It's also just really yummy, and it's got collagen in it, which I quite like, but it's just really nice. I find electrolytes quite gross and salty, whereas this one's delish. And I definitely notice I'm not as, like, if I don't have it, I don't feel as hydrated. You know how you just, like, even though I'm not feeding a huge amount, I still just feel like I need more water. So it's nice to have an electrolyte. So yeah, that's one thing. What else have we used? I'm trying to think. Oh, I get really bad aches and pains. And throughout pregnancy, I use the Pure Mama. They've got like a magnesium cream
Oh my
that
God,
is
that is,
so
I still use
nice.
it. I literally use them
Same.
like all the time.
Oh, it's so nice. Like,
Yeah.
especially like, you know, when feeding, you just get, even with the bottle feeding, I get a sore neck. And I have a bad neck
Yeah.
anyway, but I just get Todd to rub it in and I swear it. I swear by that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, what else? We don't know if it's a coincidence, but we had our first 2 full nights sleep when we switched Nala into the Love to Dream. So I will now say Love to Dreams are amazing. She's gone back to having a one wake up in the night. We admittedly have a very good sleeper.
Yeah.
But the one night we switched her, we had 2 nights in a row where she slept through the night, and I was like, yes.
Like, we must copy every single thing that we did last night again.
Definitely. And you're like, is this a
Yeah.
fluke? I'm not sure. But
Yes.
yeah, that's
Yeah.
awesome. And then we've just, yeah, we were really mindful in the products that we purchased,
Yeah.
just getting them to work with my abilities or the, like anything to make my life easier. So one of the game changers we got is like a swivel car seat. That's been awesome just for me to, it'll be
Yeah.
better when she's, we'll use it even more when she's a toddler in a bigger car seat. But even just to get the capsule in another car for me has been, yeah, that's been a game changer, just with my body and the support that I need. So yeah, honestly, I could probably keep going on because there's just so many little life hacks, but it is hard. People say this is amazing and then you buy it and you're like, that didn't work for us. So it is unfortunately an expensive trial and error, but there are some things out there that I think are, yeah, pretty epic. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Jess, for coming on the podcast and sharing your story with us. I've really loved talking to you. It's really nice to hear that sort of full circle journey. And yeah, like I said at the start of the episode, I feel like we've been talking online for ages, and it's just so nice to have you on here and hear about your story. So yeah, really grateful for you taking the time today. Thank you.
Likewise, thank you so much. As I said, this is my North Star moment. So the fact that it's finished, I'm just, yeah, it's crazy that I have a child in the room next door. So if anyone's, I guess, going through that like endless, what feels like an endless journey, just yeah, hold on to that hope because one way or another, you can definitely get there.
Thanks again for tuning in to this week's episode of Kiwi Birth Tales. I hope you have enjoyed it. Jess is easy to find on social media. I've made sure I linked her in the show notes. And of course, you can find me at Kiwi Birth Tales or at Your Birth Project. And just another huge thank you to Pure Mama for sponsoring this week's episode of the podcast. I am such a huge fangirl of Pure Mama, as you heard in the episode, Jess is too. So make sure you go and check them out for everything pregnancy skincare. I will be back with another birth story episode next week, so stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.